And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where we take weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Jonathan Wall, Managing Editor for Equipment at Golf Magazine and Golf.com, joined as always by Andrew Tursky, Senior Equipment Editor for Golf Magazine and Golf.com. Tursky, what's going on, man?
Tour Championship week, baby.
A lot of money on the line. I've always wondered what it would be like to have a putt for, I guess it used to be 10, now it's 15 million. Could you imagine having a 15 or not? Let's say a five footer for 15 million. You making or missing?
Well, I literally can't imagine that. And I feel like if you ask most of those guys, like, they're not even thinking about that. Cause if you start thinking about it, it's like, how do you even pull the trigger at that point?
I'd probably pass out.
Yeah, so nerve-wracking.
Before I pulled the putter head back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Am I making the five-footer, though? I'd like to say yes.
Now, would you be more comfortable with a left-to-right breaker or right-to-left?
Right-to-left, 100%. I'm righty, though. You're lefty, so I'm sure you would say the opposite.
Yeah. I'd say left-right for me, always.
Yeah, a little uphill so you could jam it right in the back.
That would be a career-changing 15 million.
But then you have no excuse if you miss it. It's like, this was my perfect putt.
Dude, did you ever see there's a video out on, and we're going right off the rails right away. A video on social media that I saw, and I think a guy had a putt. It looked like a buddy's trip for like 10K, maybe about a four or five footer, and he's got all of his friends around on the putting green. I'll see if I can find this video, and he totally whiffs on the putt, doesn't even scare the hole, and the dude just, you know, like falls to the ground and everybody around him is going nuts. And I kept thinking to myself, if that was me, would I be able to ever, one, look those guys in the face ever again after missing that putt, and two, would I ever even want to play golf with any of them ever again? I might go into witness protection for golf and find a new group of friends.
Those videos are all like so painful. I mean, there's so many. It's like, this is this guy's first chance at eagle and it's from like 6 feet and he just completely blows it. It's just so heartbreaking. Yeah. It's like, dang.
Well, no professor again this week. He's still in our thoughts and prayers, still getting some things done behind the scenes and hopefully get him back next week. We do golf equipment here, and I got to briefly touch on this, Tursky. The golf equipment industry right now.
Booming.
It is blowing up.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing numbers. Golf Data Tech, who kind of keeps tabs on the equipment industry, reported that golf club and ball sales for the manufacturers, they did record numbers in July, $388.6 million. That's higher than the previous record, which isn't even close. It was back in 2007. It was $368.1 million. So they eclipsed it by more than $20 million for a month. The industry right now is red hot. I think it's one of those situations where COVID kind of forced people outdoors and to kind of reassess what they were doing for their recreational hobbies. You're seeing way more golfers coming back into this space, and I think that equates to record sale numbers.
Yeah, rounds of golf are through the roof too. Just so awesome to see. You know, it's like, people don't have really much else to do, unfortunately. You know, you get outside, go play golf, and people are buying up equipment. Probably because they're just sitting online all day, just shopping. I love it. I mean, it's great golf equipment industry.
Oh, it's perfect. And I mean, you look at even non-endemic companies like Costco. I mean, they're in the two box cinnamon toast crunch game. They're not about the golf club and ball life.
Yes, they are.
You know,
they are now.
Now they are.
Yep.
They started out with a three-piece ball that got into a bit of a legal battle with a Acushnet over that one. Come out with a four-piece, or I guess it was a four-piece, then it was a three-piece. Then they come out with the KS1 putter, milled 303 stainless steel, adjustable sole weights, the kind of thing that you're looking for if you're looking for a putter at a wholesale chain, I guess. $150, and they can't even keep those things in stock.
The KS1's hot in the streets. I mean, you can't deny it.
Have you seen the prices for those on the secondary market?
No. Are they exploding? What are they at?
There are people paying $250 for a KS1 on eBay. I just went to go look and see. I thought with a lack of supply and a ton of demand, people have got to be capitalizing on that. And you can actually, through Costco's website, you can purchase up to two. So I'm sure people are purchasing two and then you keeping one and selling the other.
I mean, that's just some people savvy, $250 bucks. Business moves right there. But they sell for what? $139?
$149. And they just came back in stock on, I believe, like Thursday or Friday last week. Already sold out. Took less than a week to sell out a second time.
I wonder how many units they put up.
I mean if they did those crazy numbers with the first go around, you would think they'd probably ramp up the quantity the second time.
Like, what's your guess on quantity? What do you think?
I can't even, I mean, it's Costco. I can't even like give you a real number because
I have no
you
idea.
You walk in there and they have like giant jars of mayonnaise and you look up and they've got like pallets full of mayonnaise up above where the mayonnaise is on the floor level.
It's so true.
I can't even give you a real number here. It's bonkers. $150 bucks for a putter and they can't even keep them on the shelves.
Mayonnaise. You go to Costco to get your mayo?
Occasionally. It usually lasts me a couple of years.
Oh my God. Anyway, let's get back on Cinnamon Toast Crunch topics.
You wonder why I'm talking about Cinnamon Toast Crunch. There's a reason for that.
How hungry are you right now?
May not go there.
It must be lunchtime over there.
We record this podcast the worst possible time. We record it at my lunchtime and you expect me not to talk about lunch. It's not going to happen. I'm going to talk about food.
Got Costco free samples on the brain for sure.
I got Costco pizza. Maybe go pick up a couple slices. maybe a full pie. I don't know.
All right.
Okay. With that, let's kind of figure out what we're actually going to be talking about this week instead of Costco pizza. Get into Rory making a mid-tournament putter change. This one I feel like is a little bit different than some of the others that we normally talk about. A Callaway ad featuring Phil Mickelson with one of, I would say, the all-time lines coming from Lefty. Take a look at John Rahm's winner's bag from his win last week. Incredible putt there to win it. Also discuss a new product from Fujikura, answer a mailbag question, and we'll also have an interview with Dave Neville from Callaway, who talks about the new Big Bertha B21 line. So let's get into it, Tursky.
Sounds like a good show. See if we prove that right.
Yeah, big if, but we'll see. All right, let's get into it. We got Rory here at the top. So this is a weird one because Rory has been changing putters this season, which I don't think anybody after 2019. Rory goes on to win four times. He does it with TaylorMade Spider-X mallet, and you see this shift in Rory on the putting greens. You know, it's always been his one bugaboo. He's been so great off the tee, good iron player, you know, relatively good with the wedges, but the putter has always kind of held him back. And now he's got this Spider-X mallet, and it kind of cooled off. And we saw Rory change putters multiple times. He used a TaylorMade TP Soda with a flow neck. He also used most recently a milled version of the Soto, which I think a lot of people actually heard from on social media wanted this putter. But again, it's a tour only version. It's the Soto. So for people that maybe aren't quite aware, if we're talking like answer style heads, it looks a lot like the Newport from Scotty Cameron, a little bit more rounded instead of being squared off like the Newport 2. And this one had a plumber's neck, pretty traditional for an answer style blade. And Rory used it a little bit, even used it during the first round last week. And then just decides, you know what, the heck with it. I'm going to change putters on Friday. The interesting thing with this, Tursky, is he changes putters after shooting 70, even par 70 on Thursday. And so I think a lot of people just thought, he's searching here. He goes back to the Spider X and people, you know, got asked after his round, hey, you know, what happened? And this is one of the things you and I both love about Rory. Brutally honest.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Almost too much.
He doesn't get enough credit for that, by the way, I don't think.
I would disagree there. I think he gets a lot of credit for his honesty, especially because he's willing to talk on he's willing to speak on topics that a lot of golfers usually avoid. But he used a word that you really don't want to use in the golf space. Yippee. He said he yipped one on 13 during the first round, and that was basically it. He said it just wasn't a good stroke. He said he gets sometimes with the blade putter in particular, he gets a little indecisive or unsure with his aim. And then during the stroke, especially, you get to one of these little slippery left riders, and it's at the last minute, don't miss right. That's what he's saying to himself. And then you don't put the right hand into it. It's I think a lot of golfers out there probably know what that's like, where you just zero confidence in the putter. You know you're going to miss it. And for Rory, that was the one on 13. One putt decided it. And the blade's gone. So he's back to the mallet. But again, I wonder how many other golfers out there, I'm sure there's got to be a bunch of them out on tour, who if you were to give them truth serum, they'd probably tell you if they're changing putters, there's one putt from their previous round that just did it for them.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been there. And once you get that one little yippy feeling, it's like, all right, I got to change it up. That's when like I'll go crosshand or the claw or, yeah, you got to change your putter. And it's like, Rory's in that mode right now where he's going to be changing putters a lot. So if he has a weird feeling with one putt, I'm not surprised by this at all. The only thing I am surprised at is using the Y word in the post-game interview. Saying yip publicly is, you know, kind of just opening that can of worms for a guy like Brandel to start harping on it. And then all of a sudden, that's all anyone talks about is Rory's got the yips. You know, it's like you got no one to blame but yourself. You're the one that said it, so... I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if he should have said that or not, but we appreciate the honesty for sure. And we've all been there. So
of course,
very relatable.
We always do. Yeah. And I think that what you brought up there is kind of good food for thought. If you're really struggling with your putter and you haven't quite made a change, just do something different. Go cross-handed, change up your grip. You know, I remember Jason Day talking about when he went back to the spider with the clean crown. He just said he was getting so fixated on alignment. He just had to kind of clear his mind. He was using alignment aids on the top, and it just got to the point where he was so, like I said, fixated on the line by using that alignment aid. He just had to kind of get away from it. So that's never a bad thing. And for Rory, he even said he keeps the Spider X around because he's never quite sure if he's going to need it. So
yeah,
it's always good to have a backup option in case things go south. And even for a guy like Rory, I mean, it happens. You're going to have one putt that's going to probably do you in and make you want to make a change.
If it gets really bad and you're looking to switch it up, you could always pull a tin cup, put all the change in your left pocket. You know, desperation.
We're just, you know what you could also do? You could just get a bullseye and just flip it around and go lefty.
I like that too. I like that. Yeah, one of the mini golf putters, go lefty.
There's my tip. All right, so from Rory to a guy, man, I love Phil. There are so many things to love about Phil Mickelson. You know, again, a guy who usually says some sort of one line or some kind of quip that usually catches you. Since he got on social media, I've loved just kind of getting to watch Phil bring out that side of him that I don't think a lot of people really get to see. You know, we get to see him on the golf course, but a little bit more of his personal side off of it. He is hilarious. He's always hilarious when it comes to the videos, any sort of advertisements. He's done a whole bunch of them what was Mizzen and Main, the shirt company?
Yeah, he did like the dance video for that one.
I think it was the shirt video where he did the worm.
Yeah, he did the worm, the whole dance video that's been memed.
I mean, it's
a thousand times.
It's so good, and that's where you get to see. I mean, I know Phil's getting paid to wear the shirt, but he's worth every penny, and he's always been worth every penny for Callaway since he joined their staff. I mean, I can't even remember how many years ago that is now, but you know, Phil is the ultimate pitch man, and I've said that before. He's always going to plug the products, and. I'm just gonna say that this was an all-time line from Phil. So Callaway is doing a driver promo for the U.S. Open, where if you're a recreational golfer, you have the opportunity to win a free Maverick or Big Bertha B21 just simply by going to Dick's Sporting Goods or Golf Galaxy's website, and they've got a page there where you can buy a driver. You got to buy the driver in advance, and then you pick a Callaway staffer from the list. And if that Callaway staffer goes on to win, they're going to send you a $500 Amex gift card to pay for your driver. So seems like a pretty good deal. It's been done before, even going back to 2010, they did it at the Masters and Phil actually won that week. And it triggered a fulfillment of close to $1 million worth of drivers just simply by him winning that tournament. So again, this isn't a new promo, but I love the kind of the fun twist for this with them returning to Wingfoot. Phil does the voiceover for this Callaway commercial, and we've got to post it on golf.com right now. And he says at the end, Hirsky, as he's trying to kind of get you to enter this contest and purchase a driver and pick a Callaway staffer, he says, "Come on, we all know who it's going to be. When have I ever let you down at Wingfoot?"
A little it's self-deprecation such a good line. Humor.
Little self-deprecation. I mean, I think most golfers out there know what happened to Phil in 2006 at Wingfoot. For those who don't, the Cliff Notes version is Phil had a three-shot lead with a couple holes to play, or I guess it was three holes to play. And he comes to the last. He needs par. All he needs to do is make par. Par to win. Bogey gets him into a playoff, 18-hole playoff with Jeff Ogilvy. And in typical Phil fashion, he takes driver off the tee, hits it off the hospitality tent. Next shot, clips a tree. Fourth shot, fried egg from the greenside bunker, and he ends up making six. He calls himself an idiot. It's one of the biggest gaffes in golf history. I think I've heard you were at, were you at
I was just,
Wingfoot for that major?
I was just going to say, fun fact, I was there. Me and my dad were standing right there as he hits the shot. He hit it into the tent, and we all like, you know, kind of collect around so we could see up close the shot, and we just saw him take an absolute tumble. he's chunking shots into the tree, and he has this divot fly out, and I turned to my dad. It was, you ever seen that commercial where the divot flies and he like keeps it and then he takes care of it?
I've seen it.
It was right around that time, and I was like, I gotta go get that divot, Dad. Like, this is an all-time moment. And for some reason, I don't know why, I think there was a security guard there, or maybe I got scared of the rope or something, but I never got that divot, and that's one of my all-time letdowns right there. I just choked. Should have got that divot.
Could have made some decent money off of that. I would be willing to bet.
But yeah, that's
for what happened that week.
That's a great line from Phil, and it makes me wonder, like, he might have wrote that line. You know, they have people who write up scripts for commercials and stuff, but he's a really funny guy. Like, when he first got on social media, I kind of thought maybe it was Callaway's team. But the more we've seen, like, he's doing his own videos and he's sending his own tweets and stuff. He's just like a funny guy.
But do you really think that he thought up that line? I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I could be giving him way too much credit, but like, it could have been his idea. You don't know.
I just wonder, you know, when he says something like that, is there part of it? Is there a little piece of him that dies inside when he has to bring up the 2006 Wingfoot, or do you think he's just completely over it?
I don't know. He's finished second, like, what, seven times now? I think he's used to the US Open disappointment.
it's just like, it's part of his DNA now.
He has so many other majors, and he's got green jackets and all the money and accomplishments, and, you know, he's one of the best golfers of all time.
Here's one of the craziest things that I don't think I realized until I was looking at his Wikipedia page a few days ago. If he wins at Wingfoot, he's three legs of the way to the what would essentially be like the Tiger Slam.
Mm-hmm.
He won 05 at Baltusrol PGA. He wins the next year at Augusta 06. If he wins,
If he would have won that 06,
if he would have won the US Open, he would have been an Open Championship away from. I mean, it's the Phil Slam at that point.
Yeah,
it's not just the Tiger Slam.
That was like a tragic. That was a tragic day because Monty was in the hunt too, and obviously he still never won.
He yacked
major.
All over himself.
Oh my god, that 18
from the middle of the fairway
pole is so hard. It's absolutely absurd. It's like 480,
especially on Sunday
at
a major. Oh, yeah,
brutal hole. Really tough finisher. Yeah. Can't hit the green. If you miss the green, you're not getting it up and down. can't hit the fairway. There's nowhere to hit it. You know, I mean, if Phil hits the fairway there, it's like, oh, he's got ice in his veins. Like, you know, Phil won doing it his way, and then he flares it into the tent, and it's like, he's an idiot. Like, I don't know. That was tough. What was he gonna do? Hit iron off the tee? I guess at 3-wood layup.
Well, I mean, Johnny Miller, I don't think I've ever heard Johnny Miller. I went back and watched the footage of 18, mm-hmm. and Johnny Miller, I don't think I've ever heard him more angry. The anger in his voice as he's talking about Phil. I actually wrote the quote down just for the heck of it. This is what Johnny Miller said as Phil is like in the middle of the fairway, walking to his shot that's in a fried egg lie in the greenside bunker. He goes, "You couldn't have worse decisions than he's had on this hole. I don't care who you are. I know you all love Phil, but come on, you just got to make par. You get 3-iron off the tee. You don't have to run down the last stretch on a white stallion." I mean,
it's he's just gotta love Johnny.
Typical Johnny Miller. I mean, just absolutely eviscerating Phil Mickelson. But
is that what you would have done though? Like, if you're teeing off on 18 at the U.S. Open trying to win, you got to make par. Are you going to hit 3-iron? Are you going to hit driver? I mean, the hole's, I think it was like 470, 480 from memory. I would have to look back.
Or just hit a fairway wood off the tee. I mean, I don't know. Hindsight's 2020. At least it's great to see Phil. Like I said, a little bit of self-deprecation in that Callaway ad. And in an all-time line, I still don't know if he's really fully over it, but it is nice to see him poking fun at his 06 blunder.
That's great.
All right, John Rahm. I mean, what more can you say about the guy after that bomb that he made in the playoff and doing it on top of DJ, who makes a bomb of his own on the 72nd hole to make a play? I mean, John Rahm is just... He's on another level when he's ball striking it like he was.
Yeah, we always report on the winner's bag, and I was doing it on Sunday. I was getting John Rahm's his clubs ready to report on, and Dustin Johnson had that putt, and he was taking like 10 minutes to read this thing, and I was like, all right, he's not making this. So I sent over the winner's bag to our edit desk, and I think I momentarily jinxed him. Because Dustin Johnson rolled that thing in, I was like, I was dying. I was like, no way he made that putt. He took 12 minutes to read it. It's a triple breaker, and it just goes right in the heart.
And the thing is that he didn't even have a great reaction. It's kind of like a ho hum, you know, a little bit of like a fist bump. Hey, you know, cool man. I made a putt to get into a playoff with John Rahm.
For DJ, it's that was an like, all-time reaction though. He actually raised his hand up. You never saw anything like that before.
But you're used to seeing, I mean, for a normal golfer, a guy who doesn't go through his entire life flatlining it like DJ does. I mean, you rarely, if ever, see any sort of reaction.
Yeah.
You were expecting what we saw from John Rahm when his putt went in. You know, some energy, a come on, you know, something. You don't get it. You get the finger up and kind of a little.
Don't get a lot from DJ. I mean, you get a lot from Rahm, you know, good and bad. He's going to give you that fire, but DJ is not going to do any swan dives into the bunker anytime soon. That's all we're going to get.
I mean, Rahm's bag, he's a TaylorMade staffer. There's not a ton of, I don't know, I would say not a ton of stories going on when it comes to his gear. He's TaylorMade sim, 10.5 degree in the driver, 15 degree sim in the 3-wood. He actually uses the same Alder Latour Green 75TX shaft, which using the same weight in your driver and 3-wood, I know Sergio Garcia is a guy who actually does that all the way through the 5-wood just to kind of keep a consistent weight. It's not something that's you know, totally off the wall. He's sim in the 5-wood, 19 degrees, graphite design, Tour 80 DI8X. He's P750, which, you know, P750 is gonna be replaced with the new P series line that they're coming out with shortly. He's 4 through pitch in that. Project X 6.5, milled grind high toe, 52 degree. Which this is kind of interesting though, Tursky. Did you notice this? He's milled grind high toe in the 52, but he's standard milled grind 2 in the 56 and the 60. I don't know if there are many guys who go high toe in a 52.
Yeah, I was confused by that as well. I was thinking like maybe it's a CG thing. Maybe he just wants to flight his 52 a little bit lower or something.
It could be, but it's just it's odd because you never really, again, you never really see guys go high toe. I mean, usually it's 60. I know Colin Morikawa went to the went to Tigers grind, the TW grind, in his 56 and 60 last week at Olympia Fields. But yeah, you rarely see guys go 52 with the high toe. The one club I did want to talk about, just kind of go through the rest of his bag, TaylorMade Spider-X chalk and the TP5 golf ball, is that Spider-X chalk putter. You know, we've seen the copper. The chalk is one that we, you know, TaylorMade, when they came out with the initial Spider-X, was just in a copper color. And they've kind of shifted gears from the red to having, you know, red and black, and then they went to a completely different color scheme with the copper color, and then they added two additional colors in the Spider-X with the navy and the chalk, and it came through feedback from tour players who just kind of wanted to see different colors when they looked down. And the chalk actually looks, I mean, it looks like what it says. It's chalky. It almost, to me, kind of blends in with that true path alignment that they have at on the top crown. It's almost like the same color.
Yeah, it's definitely a subtle colorway, but I'm not shocked they're branching out to different colors. I mean, they have the whole My Spider X where you could get any color in the whole rainbow. So
right.
I think for them, it was just deciding what they wanted to put in more of a retail line. But, you know, I'm actually surprised to see Rom even using a new putter, because he's a guy who, like, he'll go on the range and not even test equipment for the whole tournament, you know, whereas we see guys all the time who are trying shafts, they're making little adjustments here and there. He's more of a guy who just doesn't change equipment, so even him throwing a new putter in the bag is surprising to me.
Yeah, that was, I think, last year, if correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was right around the Players Championship last year where he switched to Spider-X chalk, because he had been using the Spider Limited red for a while. And he just kind of seemed to be one of those guys similar to like Jason Day, who used the Spider Limited red for so long. I mean, going back to when it first came out, you just never really thought that they would actually change. So Rom changes putters and you're going, okay, let's see what happens here. And I mean, it's like he hasn't really even skipped a beat. I mean, he made it to number one with the chalk putter. And again, it's a color change. The alignment on the top, that true path, is a little bit different, and it's supposed to kind of help when you're standing over putts. It's just kind of gives you another bit of a visual aid that's supposed to kind of add, similar to like if you had a line on the top, an alignment aid, that true path is supposed to kind of give you a similar design without having to use the line. I know Rory actually uses the true path, that the white stripe through the top, and he also has a black alignment line. So there are some guys that use both, but Rom does not. But yeah, putter's been good to him, and I would be really shocked if he changes this one out anytime soon.
He ain't changing. Maybe Rory should change the chalk. He should try out some different color schemes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting when guys play well with a particular club, you usually see others follow suit. And, you know, it always makes you wonder if you will see a few guys here maybe in the next few weeks, especially with, I mean, the tour season is starting up again in earnest. I mean, Napa's going to be here before you know it. I wonder if we see any chalk putters making their way out on tour.
See if Tiger gives one a go at all. Yeah, you think he's ever going to try a spider?
I posted, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. I posted something on social media, and you would have thought that I had suggested that Tiger should go lefty. I mean, the responses I got to Tiger using like a full blown, I mean, I know he's used a winged version, the Ardmore.
Yeah, the Ardmore, yeah.
But he's never used like a full body mallet. And I don't know. I think he probably should at least try it. I mean, the way he's putting right now.
There's no way that he hasn't tried it. He's definitely at least tried it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think he's for sure tried it. I think he's for sure tried it at home.
Yeah, he's got a lot of clubs in that back room of his.
Did you see the Ardmore when it very first came out, went in his bag a few years back? That thing was beat up. Like literally as if he had dragged it along the ground. I remember taking right. in-hand photos that very first week that he had it was in DC for when his event was there. And I couldn't believe how beat up it was. I mean, so you know that he never shows up with a putter that looks pristine. I don't know if that's just a thing, if he likes having that well-worn look, or if that's just really like he was spending hours upon hours grinding on the green, because that's what it looked like.
I think he likes beating those putters up, though. Like, he doesn't even keep the head cover on it all the time.
I feel like that's like during practice rounds. The next time I'm around Tiger, I feel like that's a question that either you or I need to ask him.
I'm asking him next time. I need to know.
Like,
I think he just likes dinging it up. I don't think he cares about like the the integrity of the putter. He's just like, whatever.
It's never been a wall hanger for him. It's always going to be a gamer.
It's wild. You wouldn't think that with Tiger, but it's true.
Yeah,
his putters are always banged up.
They definitely are. All right, let's get into this week's gear spotlight. Taking a look at a brand new shaft from Fujikura. You know, their Ventus product, Tercy, you know this, is seeing a massive uptick in tour usage since it came out at the end of 2018.
It's hot.
It went from being a one profile product. It was just in the mid-launch blue, and then they add a red and a black version. I know DJ used the black briefly, but you know, you look at where they came from at the end of 2018. At the 2020 Northern Trust, they led the way in the driver shaft count in Ventus. Out of all the shafts that Fuji had in play that week, they had 23 of the 34 driver shafts for Fuji wore Ventus products. So we already know that their driver product, when it comes to Ventus, has a little bit of history, but Fuji's actually starting to branch out a little bit with their products, bringing in a new hybrid shaft. It's called the Ventus HB. It's actually built on a similar platform to the driver in the fairway version. It's gonna have a black version, which is gonna be a low launch, and mid launch is gonna be your blue. It's gonna have the VeloCore technology that's found in the driver and the fairway products. And what that does is it just tightens up the dispersion, which is a great thing if you're hitting driver off the tee or fairway, but I think it even becomes more important when you're talking about a shaft that you could be throwing into not only a hybrid, but Fuji mentioned that this shaft can be used in utility irons. So if you've got a driving iron that you really like, you could slot this shaft in there. We've seen a lot of players go to multi-material shafts in their driving irons. They don't necessarily use steel in those products. So yeah, Fuji's going to have this new HB product out in the Ventus line. It's now out. It's $200 per shaft, which, you know, pretty much in line with what you see for a lot of today's higher end shafts. But yeah, I'm really curious to try this shaft, Tursky, because I've tried the Ventus in my driver and really liked it. And now I definitely want to see if I see similar results I don't usually use hybrid, so in a utility iron.
I don't usually use a hybrid, obviously, but I do have the new hybrid.
You might use an 8 hybrid.
Yeah, I got the new hybrid shaft from Fuji hanging out in the office, and I do plan on putting it in the driving iron, give it a little test. Right now, I've actually never used a driving iron that has a graphite shaft, so I'm pretty fired up to try this one out.
I actually just started, it's probably been a little over a year now, so it's not just recently, but I put one in Ping i500.
How do you like it?
Dude, I threw a Project X Hazardous Black in an i500, mm-hmm. and it's like you're just hitting bullets, low bullets all the time. It's probably one of my favorite clubs in the bag. It may be my favorite right now, just because if the driver's off, I can always throw that one in and just know that I'm gonna find the fairway with it. And it's always low. I don't have to worry. I've always been a guy that's been a high ball hitter. Mm-hmm. This one's low. It's got a penetrating flight. So yeah, I think you're gonna have a lot of fun with that new Ventus HB product.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I pretty much only hit it off the tee, so I'd like to hit it far and straight.
Or if you're like me, you can know that if you got a punch out of the woods, you got that low flight down.
That's the Timmy B joke. We need him here to make fun of you for hitting in the woods.
Shout out to Timmy B. We still have your jokes, man.
If you're listening, we miss you, Tim.
Still keeping them warm for you. And with that, let's get into this week's mailbag question. It's from Doran Drummond on Instagram, who asks, I'm taking my dad to get fit, which was his Father's Day present. He is playing some Ping Eye 2s, probably some of the, I would say, best irons ever produced. He wants to know, how do I explain to him that standard lofts are stronger now, why that is the case, and how will that impact his fitting? When comparing his old club, should he compare similar lofts or 8-iron to 8-iron? Any tips that he can give or that we can give to help make his transition to this century would be very appreciated. Doran, yeah, it's a great question. It's probably one that I think a lot of golfers that maybe are entering the space again with older clubs or might be asking, how do you find a new set when you're using something that has lofts from, you know, 10, 15 years ago? Cause as we know, lofts have changed a lot, I would say, even in the last 5 years.
This is a hotly debated topic, and I'm really happy that we got like expert opinion in the interview that you're about to listen to.
Yeah.
So, I would tell him, like, to answer the question is, I would tell him not to even look at loft. Just get fit, hit the irons, go in with an open mind, just go purely based on feedback and not worry about lofts, because I think that's just going to get in your head and you're going to be like, oh, this brand's cheating because the loft, blah, blah, blah. But it's like they're doing it for a reason. You know, they've worked so hard on getting launch high and more forgiveness that you don't want to hit your 6-iron super, super high. You want it to be in that 6-iron window. So you have to adjust the loft. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you there. And that's what I would suggest is I wouldn't even bring the Ping Eye 2s into the equation. You know, this is not an apples to apples comparison. It's not even close to apples to apples, you know, and when you're talking about irons that may be, you know, 10, even 20 years old, that some people are, as they're looking for new irons, because when it comes to irons, people aren't changing them out like a driver or even a wedge on a semi-regular basis. So you need to just keep those irons at home and go and get fit for something that fits your eye. And that's what I would suggest if your dad's going, is just don't even bring them, because it's just going to add more confusion. And yeah, you're right. We have somebody on this week, Dave Neville, who we asked them point blank about, you know, there's a pretty hot topic about people claiming that there's loft jacking going on. So anyway, but to answer your question, don't even bring them into the equation. Go out there, help them get fit. And, you know, if anything, if he likes that Ping Eye 2 profile, that's what I would really concentrate on, is look at the aesthetics of the golf club. And what your dad likes to see when he's setting an iron down. That's way more important at that point. You know, the technology's changed so much that he's going to benefit regardless, especially on those off-center hits. Worry more about what he likes visually when he sets the club down at a dress.
I think with, like, sole width, too, because that's actually a pretty sneaky important part of iron design, whether you like the iron, too. So, I mean, I would say, bring the irons, hit them to get, like, a baseline, and then just not even worry about like the specs and lofts or whatever. Just hit everything you possibly can, see what you like. And definitely don't worry about the lofts unless you're doing a combo set, but the fitter's got you. The fitter knows what clubs can go together with what and what needs to be bent a certain way for your swing, shaft flex, blah, blah, blah. They got it. The fitters are trustworthy. Have fun with it.
All right, and with that, let's get into this week's interview. We had a chance to sit down with Dave Neville. He's the Senior Director for Brand and Product Management at Callaway. We talked to Dave about a number of things, especially the new Callaway Big Bertha B21 line, how they came up with the name. We talked about the loft jacking debate and all the new technology packed into this new club line. Enjoy the interview. All right, well, Callaway has a brand new product line. It's the Big Bertha B21. And anytime we're talking new Callaway product, there's only one guy, in my opinion, that I want to talk to about new gear. That's Callaway's Senior Director of Brand and Product Management, Dave Neville. Dave, what's going on, man?
Hey, Jay Wall. Good to be with you guys. What's up, Andrew? How you doing, bud?
Good to have you on, man.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I understand business is booming right now. We just saw a recent report from Golf Data Tech that said golf equipment had the highest sales in a single month ever last month in July. Have you guys saw that on your end?
It's been pretty incredible, you know, what a year it's been, almost like a whipsaw we were talking about when everything got shut down and all the courses were shut down. We tried to cancel a bunch of orders and supply that we had in, and then everything opened up and it just started booming. You know, golf is a great social distance sport. People love being outside. There's so many new people getting into the game and then so many people getting back into the game. Yeah, June and July were great months for us, but of course we're trying to make up for March and April and a bit of May as well. So we're clawing back to try to be even where we were last year.
Was that something you guys were even expecting? Like, how were you preparing for that in terms of supply and just in general?
Yeah, no, it was been a huge challenge for our operations team. Around this time every year, we would typically have a lot of people at our suppliers, in our factories, making sure that we're getting all the supply, and the demand has been absolutely off the charts. Maverick, I mean, hate to say we're back ordered in a few different SKUs. We're trying to bring in more supply. The fittings are going gangbusters, and so many people getting into the game. And maybe people are not taking as many trips as they did before, so they're spending a little bit of money on golf clubs. Our golf bags are doing well. Our junior sets and our kind of our starter sets have been just absolutely killing it also. So it's been a really, really interesting year.
As somebody who makes their living off covering golf equipment, I can tell you that that those numbers were a welcome sight. So let's get into the new Big Bertha B21 Nevs. I mean, this is a name where if you've been around golf clubs for a while, you know the Big Bertha name. But myself and Tursky especially, we noticed that there was kind of this emphasis on trying to kind of get it back to, you know, what Big Bertha originally was when it very first came out. Can you kind of give people who might not know a little bit of the history behind Big Bertha and kind of what you were trying to do with this new line?
Yeah, Bertha is such an iconic name, such a legendary name, probably the name most associated with Callaway Golf, and it's been around for years. Mr. Callaway, he was a maverick and a pioneer in the golf industry. He wanted to make clubs that work for all golfers. So obviously, we have tons of tour players and we have better player clubs and all that, but he didn't want to just focus on better player clubs. He focused a lot of his energy on clubs that would help people enjoy the game more. And that's really what we wanted to do with this new Big Bertha, the B21 line, is really get back to that kind of true super game improvement in terms of the irons. And then in the woods, we have this whole new formula that we've never used before, and I don't think it exists out there in the industry today, that is a real kind of slice stopper, slice killer for so many people who struggle with the slice. And there are a lot of those people out there for sure.
You mentioned kind of that slice stopper. If somebody was going to go pick up this driver off the rack, and you were going to kind of try and give them an idea of who this driver is geared for, what kind of handicap range are we talking about, and what kind of a golfer would most benefit from this technology and design?
That's what I'm really excited about this line is we really have a distinct segment here at Jay Wall. Well, we're really going after the player that needs the most help, you know. So this is the player that's fighting the slice. This is not a tour club, so you're not going to see it out there in the playoffs, you know. It's not like leaking out on the conforming list and people put it in play. It's really for that player. They're down and across it. They're spinning it too much. They got tons of side spin. And what a lot of those golfers do is they end up, if they're a righty, aiming into the left trees, you know, or vice versa, if they're a lefty, just to try to get the ball in the fairway. And when the ball hits the fairway, it's going across the fairway rather than down the fairway. So we did a huge test where we brought in a bunch of consumers, had them bring in their gamers. Basically, the ticket to get in was like you had to be like a 17 handicap or above just to even get into the test. And When you see out on tour, you see guys getting locked in at 2,200, 2,300, up to maybe 2,600 RPM of spin. these people were bringing in 3,300, 3,500, you know, 4,000 RPM of spin with their driver.
Wow.
So if you get a driver that can reduce a lot of that spin, not only is the ball going to go straighter, it's going to go longer for a lot of these golfers and allow them to not have to aim into the trees to get the ball into the fairway.
Yeah, you're talking about a new recipe of design for people that want to reduce a slice. And I feel like we've heard for years that high handicappers, they need low and back CG. Better players, they need low and forward CG. And now you're kind of switching that. Well, not switching it, but you're saying that high handicappers need low and forward CG as well as the fast swingers. How is that possible?
Yeah, that's a great point. And we really have kind of flipped it on its head. You know, we still have a very high MOI driver here with the Big Bertha. So it really has kind of a triangular type of weighting system. So there's a lot of weight back, which helps with the MOI. And then we have the draw bias, which is helping with the shaping. So we have a lot of weight in the heel as well. But the big thing that's different is this low forward CG. So what a low center of gravity gives you is lower spin. A forward center of gravity gives you that spin consistency. And this is really a lot of the things we learned with Maverick. The Maverick standard driver has that. And even with some of our Sub-Zero products also, what they had is a more forward CG, but they didn't necessarily have the high MOI because they were really for the better players. So now we have this sort of triangular weighting system that we've never really had before, where we have a low forward CG, which is going to really help reduce the spin, but it's still a high MOI. It's a big shape. It's kind of more triangular looking. It's pulled back. We've got not only weight in the weight port that's in the back, but weight around that as well, which, you know, you can see out there online what we did with the weighting there. So it's a formula we've never been able to do before. And people ask, well, why haven't you done that in the past? Why isn't anybody else doing that? Well, really that flash face that is up front has helped to unlock that with more ball speed in terms of the ripples and the bumps, and using AI for that, it's allowed us to have this low and forward CG that we really couldn't have before for a higher handicap type of golfer. Yeah, that's a great question, Jaywal. And I think, you know, we've been pushing the AI for a couple of years now. And I think some people think that we're using AI, but all the faces are the same. And that's not true. All the faces are unique for each of the models and each of the heads. So even in the Maverick lineup, the Maverick Max is different from the standard, different from the Sub-Zero. And then Bertha has a totally different AI face. And what we're doing is we're basically putting different constraints into the supercomputer, you know. So you say it's kind of running wild, you know. It is running wild a little bit, but we have different constraints that we're putting in. So maybe on Maverick, we want to really increase the peak ball speed, so in the middle of the face, have the fastest. But on a more game improvement type of product, super game improvement product, we want to have that ball speed more spread out there. We also want to have spin rate consistency, so you. A lot of these people hitting Big Bertha, they're hitting it all over the face. So you can notice one thing, the face is bigger than what we have with Maverick, but they're hitting in the heel, they're hitting in the toe, hopefully sometimes in the center as well. we want to have that ball speed all over the face, whereas if you look at the Sub-Zero or better player in Maverick, that face is going to be different. It's going to be more about peak ball speed and also spin rate consistency. So it's all about the parameters that we're putting into the supercomputer, and then, like you said, we're letting it kind of run wild from there.
If someone's trying to decide right now between buying the Maverick Max and the B21 driver or whatever else in the line, what do you suggest to them?
Yeah, great question, because we're getting a lot of questions about how is this really different from Maverick Max? Maverick Max has been killer. Like I said, you know, we're selling a ton of Maverick Max. That's an interesting one because a lot of better players playing Maverick Max too with the weight. It has two weights, you know, the heavy and the lightweight, with the heavier weight in the back. And we even see it on tour. I mean, there's Maverick Max out there on tour. The B21 is not a tour club. It's really for the players that need the most help. And one thing that's a big difference between that and the Maverick Max is it's a lot lower spinning. So I would say the Maverick Max is kind of more of your conventional high MOI type of driver, especially when you put that weight in the back. So it's going to launch higher, but it's going to have more spin than the Big Bertha V21. That's where you get kind of that slice stopper, you know, spin killer type of thing with the B21, that it is much lower spin, and that's coming from that low forward CG, which is something different from what Maverick Max has.
So with the hybrids, a little bit different design compared to the drivers in the fairways due to that metal injection molding, those tungsten weights that are in the sole. You know, we always kick around these big words that I think a lot of consumers probably aren't really aware of, or the benefits that they might be able to provide. What are these tungsten weights going to do? I mean, because this is not an easy design, especially when you're talking about a very small profile in a hybrid.
Yeah, so the tungsten weights is actually a technology that we brought over from our super hybrid. And the super hybrid, you know, that's our most premium titanium hybrid, but that had these split tungsten weights. And we wanted to do that in this hybrid as well. In order to do that, we have a sub-5-gram triaxial carbon crown, so a super lightweight crown, and that gives us more of the discretionary weight. There's over 70 grams split between these two tungsten weights, and one's in the heel, one's in the toe, and that gives you really high MOI, but they're also low and deep, which really helps your launch as well. So that's something we don't have in the Maverick, and we didn't have in the previous Big Bertha either. We also have more offset in this Bertha as compared to the Maverick lineup. So when you set it down, there's a generous amount of offset, which is going to help you kind of square up the club. And it's a big shape, so it's a very, very forgiving shape. Then you have the unique AI face, which is different for each of the models. We're going all the way up to the 8 hybrid. So the Ocho is in play. J-Wall, I know that's a fan favorite of yours.
I always loved the high-lofted hybrids, D-Nevs.
The high-lofted hybrids are interesting because people always say, why do you have them? You don't really need them. But then we sell out of them. People love them. They love the high-lofted hybrids. This type of player, they're doing a lot of combo sets, and it's not just a couple hybrids in the bag. A lot of these players have 3 or 4 hybrids in the bag. And so you can go all the way up to that 8 hybrid. They're using the hybrids as scoring clubs. So they're hitting them into par 4s and on par 3s. So they need them to launch high and land soft, and they need a lot of loft. And that's what you're giving them with the 8 hybrid there, going all the way up to 33 degrees of loft.
It's important to mention, too, with this hybrid. I don't know why I'm fixated on the hybrid right now, but it's a slice buster in a hybrid. I mean, if you look at pictures, and we posted some on golf.com when we did the release stories. But this hybrid has some serious offset, which I'm pretty sure is not easy to do when you're talking about a club of that size.
Yeah, it has the most offset of any hybrid we've ever done, actually. And we got a question about, in previous generation, we had the adjustable hosel. We went the fixed hosel here. So one of the reasons is the offset. When you put that adjustable hosel and then you have the offset, you get kind of a Frankenstein-looking hybrid. It looks pretty weird. So that's a big reason. The other thing is the weight in the adjustable hosel. You know, you're giving up about 10 to 13 grams there. And so we're able to put that into those tungsten weights that are low and deep in the club. So it has a generous amount of offset. It really is a slice killer, even in the hybrid as well. It's got jailbreak in there. It's going to be super forgiving. These hybrids are going to be killer. Really, really excited about them.
I think there's a big group of people who are like kind of turned off when they see a bunch of offset. But offset really helps people that need to hit a draw. Can you explain like exactly why that is?
Yeah, so it really sets the shaft access ahead of the club head, which gives you a little bit more time to help square it up. And it's also a confidence thing too. When you set it down, you have a pretty big looking hybrid, you got some offset there. It really helps people with their contact point to square it up, but then where they're hitting it on the face as well. And we've done a lot of testing on this, and for those higher handicappers, yeah, this is not a tour hybrid. This is not a, you know, 2 handicap type of hybrid. I don't expect to see it in Turski's bag. You never know. But it's going to help that guy that or gal that needs the extra help. So, you know, it's probably a 12, 15 handicap or above that's looking at this whole lineup.
Is there more challenges when you're designing a super game improvement club versus a tour club, or is it easier?
Actually, it can be a lot of fun because we can bring a lot of technology to this super game improvement category that we might not be able to do with, say, an MB type of iron or a CB type of iron. You got this big shape. Obviously, the Big Bertha is the first iron that we brought the face cup to, and that iron went immediately to number one, and we've been number one in irons ever since that iron. So Bertha's always been one that we've brought a ton of technology. We first brought the tungsten energy core to the irons there. Now we have the visible tungsten energy core. So I would say our designers love designing for super game improvement, and these are players that need the most help. You can help them out a lot. You know, you on the driver, you take somebody who's spinning it 3,300, you get them down below 3,000, that's going to be a huge improvement for their game. You know, with the tour players, it's a lot tougher. You know, you're really, and both of you guys cover that closely, but you're really looking at the margins for the tour players.
It's rare when we are doing a product release that we talk about an OEM design shaft. But I think this is an interesting part of this B21 lineup, the fact that Callaway designed a new RCH shaft. And this is a shaft that actually was played on tour years and years ago when it was first brought out. Why was it important to design a shaft around this lineup as opposed to just saying, here are some stock options, they're great, but we're not going to go down that road of designing our own shaft?
Yeah, so the RCH shaft has great heritage within Callaway. The RCH stands for Richard C. Helmstetter. He was one of the founders of Callaway Golf. He was the first head of R&D. And obviously, Dr. Alan Hocknull is the one who has replaced Mr. Helmstetter. He's still around, still, you know, a legend within Callaway. That shaft was a great brand, a great shaft. Like you said, it was played out on tour. So we wanted to bring back that brand with an all new shaft. And when we were looking at this Big Bertha lineup, as you know, this is a full lineup. In the past few iterations, we've just had the iron and the hybrid. So now we had a full lineup. We were trying to look for a shaft that would really help this type of golfer and really would help with launch specifically. And frankly, there just really wasn't something out there that was going to work across the board, that was going to work for drivers, irons, hybrids, fairways as well. We have a lot of shaft knowledge within Callaway. I'm not sure if a lot of people know this. You know, we work with the shaft manufacturers all the time, giving them what our specs are going to be, what we're looking for, helping them to design the shafts, testing shafts for them as well. We didn't feel like there was something out there that was exactly suited for this Big Bertha lineup. So we said, we're going to design it ourselves, and it's going to be this RCH shaft. It has an extra carbon bias layer down by the tip. We call it an active tip section. Basically, that just helps with the launch, you know, and a lot of these players, they need the launch. They need to get the ball up in the air, and that's what this shaft is going to do. The other thing that's interesting is we have it all the way from a 40-gram all the way up to a 75-gram stiff. We have it across all these different weight classes. And, you know, we have other custom shafts that are out there. We encourage people to get fit. We have no upcharge options. If you don't like the RCH shaft, you can get something else. But I'm telling you, this is ideally suited to work with the Big Bertha lineup.
The profile of these irons, in my opinion, is probably the most closely resembling the original Big Bertha in terms of the offset and just kind of the overall shaping of it. When you're kind of designing an iron, how much do you go back to some of the original Big Bertha designs and kind of, do you glean anything from kind of that profile or shaping when you're designing a new product like this?
Well, this is an interesting one because it is an all new design, but we got a lot of feedback on BB19, which was our previous generation. It did well for us, but it was actually moving a little bit towards game improvement. So it had a little bit thinner top line, a little bit less offset. Remember, it had the dark PVD finish, which makes it look more compact. And then we had feedback from a lot of our fitters and some of our sales reps also, is that the type of player that we're giving this iron to, they really want it to be a wider sole, thicker top line, and be really a true super game improvement iron. The other thing we noticed in the marketplace, even from the competition, is a lot of competition moving towards that game improvement and almost vacating the super game improvement category. So we really, I mean, that's what Big Bertha has owned for years. So we really wanted to move back to a true super game improvement iron. So even versus Maverick Max, in some of the irons, the sole is 50% wider than Maverick Max. It's got more offset. It's got a thicker top line. You set that thing down, you know it is a true super game improvement iron, but still a really good looking iron, something we want people to be proud to have in the bag. Big Bertha has always been about easy to hit, launch, and tons of distance. That's what we feel like we've done for this iron, but really getting back into that super game improvement space and not apologizing for it.
Which irons, you mentioned some are 50% wider, which irons in the set are, and what kind of golfer can benefit from that wider sole?
Really in the lower loft. So going, we're starting just with the four iron and then going up. So in the 4, 5, and 6, it is quite a bit wider than where we are with Maverick Max, and even quite a bit wider than where we were with the BB19. And when you get up to the, you know, the pitching and the A and the sand, you know, not quite as wide, but we know a lot of players in the mid irons and the lower irons, they need a lot of help. You know, they need that wide sole. Like I said, we did this huge test with higher handicappers. A lot of players kind of bouncing into the ball, hitting things thin, and then they're hitting the next one a little bit fat. So that wide sole with camber, that helps them a lot. The thicker top line is going to give players confidence. And as you were talking about before, Andrew, more offset that just helps you square up the ball, and it really helps your contact point on the face as well.
It's more of a general question here, and I might actually be the only person that cares about this in the world. I'm not sure.
Probably not.
When you're coming out with like a new line of golf clubs, a new family, are there ever any big arguments over like what color scheme or what name you're giving that product line? And what's kind of like the process? Is there like a voting process, or how does that work?
Well, the answer is yes. There are a lot of discussions. I don't know if you call it arguments. Sometimes it might get there. Some heated discussions, some passionate thoughts about what color schemes to use. We do a lot of consumer research around that type of thing as well. I think on Big Bertha, this is perfect. You know, Bertha has had that kind of deep blue and the red and the black for years. So really locking into that. But even what we wanted to do with the B21 name in terms of being able to differentiate it. B21, obviously you're looking at for the year coming out at the end of 2020 and into 2021. But also, as some of you guys may know, I'm an Air Force guy, former Air Force officer. The B-21 is the replacement for the B-2 stealth bomber. So it's something that I'm excited about. So I was one of the ones who was pushing the B-21, which we have on the sole of the club on the driver, and then it's on the hosel on the irons as well. But yeah, a lot of discussions about naming, a lot of discussions about color and schemes and looking at that. Chip Brewer is our CEO. He has the final vote that kind of overrides the rest of ours. But we do have a product council that we'll look and have discussions about these. But yeah, I mean, we're always trying to dial things in the last minute to make these look really premium, get the naming right, all of that.
Last question for me. You know, a lot of people have been talking about this move towards stronger lofts in irons. You know, and for people that don't know, the B21 has a 43-degree pitching wedge. Where do you kind of, what do you say to people who keep saying you're just jacking with the lofts? It's not really a pitching wedge anymore. You know, what are you guys doing? What's kind of your response to people that say that?
Yeah, so we're always accused of loft jacking, and I love this discussion. I wish I had my partner in crime, Dr. Alan Hocknull, because he gets really fired up on this one, or Scott Manwaring, who runs our R&D for irons. They can go for hours on this. The lofts on the Big Bertha irons are not the strongest we have in the lineups. We do have 43-degree pitching wedge in there. They're similar to where we were last generation with the Big Bertha. They're similar to the Apex, not quite as strong as the Maverick. The other thing you got to look at, because the loft is just one piece of it, and we're looking at launch angles, we're looking at spin rates, and we're looking at descent angles as well. So a static loft is just one piece of the puzzle. We have over 40 grams of tungsten low and deep in the head of these irons. So if you were to have what we call tour spec type of loss on the big Bertha iron. So say a 46 degree pitching wedge, 47 degree pitching wedge, maybe 48. These would go straight up in the air and you would lose a ton of distance because of how wide that sole is, because of all of the tungsten that's in there. You're almost required to strengthen the loft to get it into the launch window. And that's really more important to us than what the static loft is what launching angle are they launching in? What is the peak height and what is the descent angle? And we're looking at all of that. And I think you'll see that from the big Bertha irons. They're easy to launch. They launch high, but they have downrange, a really good peak height. And that is far downrange because they have a lot of ball speed as well. So yeah, I mean, the loft jacking debate goes on and on. But I think people need to get over it. You know, it's just one piece of the whole puzzle. Go in and get fit and see what the spin rates are, see what the launch angles are, and see if they work for you.
See, there's the response to the loft jacking argument. Just get over it. There you go. Yeah, just
get over it. But it seems like that's an ongoing one, and we have a lot of fun with it. These ones aren't really, you know, jacked lofts. But, you know, with the Maverick, we have a 41-degree pitching wedge, and they're selling like crazy. You know, been number one selling iron. So I think it does work.
Dean Evs, this was great. Thanks for hopping on the Fully Equipped podcast.
Always good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on. I enjoy listening to the podcast and encourage people to go out and check out the new Big Bertha B21.
Thank you, sir. And big shout-out to Dave Neville from Callaway for a great interview. Hit us up at Fully Equipped Golf on Instagram or at Fully_Equipped on Twitter. And we'll see you next week. Thanks.